I want to go through the threshold issues, which is another slide or two down. The threshold issues in telemedicine. So let's go back to the Meals on Wheels example. So if we're going to put a physician in a situation where the physician is going to get the information and be able to and engage with the patients, are we putting with the homebound elderly? Are we putting a physician on the other on the other end of that that virtual encounter? Or are we going to put a mid-level? Or are we going to put a dentist in there? Is there dentistry that we can do? Are we going to put a home health aide? Each one of those professions requires a different analysis. Just on the regulatory side, we haven't got to the payer side. We haven't got to the real business model. But important when you're looking at it is the establishment of the professional relationship. Here on this slide, we're talking about the physician-patient relationship. That is the key piece in healthcare fraud, in telehealth fraud cases. It is the key piece in telehealth across the board. It's the key piece in understanding and developing a program that has integrity, is being able to identify when is the physician-patient relationship established. And then the other issues of the person needs to be identified and confirmed, and then is a face-to-face visit necessary?
So can a physician-patient relationship be established via means other than audio and video?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. In Texas, absolutely. In Texas, it's whatever you can justify meets the bricks and mortar standard of care is what happened in Texas.
Gotcha.
Because in Texas, we're on the forefront of telemedicine. Because in Texas, we lead the nation. We do now. It took us a long time, but we do now. Here's some things to look at. I want to give you guys some nuggets, and then we're going to talk about some more practical stuff. But I want to give you some take home nuggets. The Ryan Haight Act is something that I think everybody's beginning to look at, but we keep bumping into it a lot, and that is the limitations on prescribing of controlled substances. I'll talk a little bit about that in a little bit. It's important to run all of the traps. One of the things that I have been helping my clients understand is that you have to develop, when you're using a virtual care, you're using digital health systems, you have to develop protocols, much more detailed protocols than you would for bricks and mortar from a practical standpoint. But tracking what you would do bricks and mortar, and that protocol needs to have the elements of what is it going to take to meet the licensure requirements for the providers I've got on board? What's it going to take to meet the contractual obligations on the technology side or on any other situation? So regulatory, contractual, and then what's it going to take to make the payers happy? And you have to do every single virtual healthcare solution. You have to look at all of those things. Where we get distracted is that we look at one of those things in a vacuum, and there isn't a thorough examination of everything that's happening in the virtual world. Different from bricks and mortar, where you just walk somebody in, you walk the provider in the room, and you walk the patient in the room, and you wish them the best of luck. In the virtual world, you're putting them in a situation where they are at risk. They're at risk for not being informed enough. They're at risk for sharing more information in that context than the context is or the platform is prepared to help them with. So you really, from a legal standpoint, to look at these things in isolation, I think is dangerous.
Now, what you said, protocols. Are you recommending written protocols? Are you talking?
Okay. Yeah. I'm talking, and we can even break it out to just checklists of the concept of a protocol of, okay, if we're going to have this kind of patient, this kind of provider, what do we need to make sure we've got? What do we need to check off? So if you work back from the claims department, if you've got a checklist for the claims department to say, okay, we had the right license, we had the right this, we had the right that, we for this code, we need this and that. For what, when the claims people know, when you can, on the finance side, on the financial side, examine that back, because you're going to end up spending a lot less time on the regulatory side if you've looked at it from the finance side first. Let's go on to the prescribing controlled substances. So the Ryan Haight Act, I'm not going to get into a lot with you. I think everybody in the room knows about it. Important to know is in October, Congress put in passed a law that requires the DEA to come up with the telemedicine registration, which is going to solve, supposedly, the challenge that everybody's been having with prescribing controlled substances over in a virtual context, in a telemedicine context. That DEA is supposed to have adopted by that 1 year anniversary. So the challenges with the Ryan Haight Act and controlled substances of you have to have a DEA registration. The location where the patient is at generally has to, at least for the initial visit, has to be somewhere that has a DEA registration. The confusion that comes around with that, the confusion about what DEA registration the provider is supposed to have and what address that's supposed to be assigned to, all of those things that are still issues that we have to work through and are remaining for compliance issues that we're going to see as lawyers, those hopefully are going to be resolved come October.